The Coast 89.7 is proud to present the latest edition of our radio documentary series produced with the financial support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program. Curating Cape Breton's Multicultural Mosaic, a dedication to diversity past and present, is a Coast 89.7 original production. And now, The Story of Home with your host, Donnie Antle.
Welcome to The Story of Home. I'm Donnie Antle. In this, our final episode, we take a look into Cape Breton's future and ask, where do we go from here? Over the course of this series, I have had the chance to learn the stories that make up Cape Breton's past. I got to travel across the length and breadth of our island, meeting people from all different kinds of cultural backgrounds, learning how their people contributed to the Cape Breton we're so proud to call home. What struck me most was the similarities, rather than the differences. Each and every person I met shared similar stories, similar experiences, and similar hopes for the future. I asked each person I interviewed the same question. What challenges face Cape Breton in the future, and what solutions do you see to those challenges? The answers I got were striking. A recurrent theme was our declining population, perhaps best expressed by Charlie Dan Roach.
Well, I think the biggest challenge, whether it be French or English or Mi'kmaq or whatever, is the fact that our people are moving away. We're losing our youth. We spend a lot of time, money, and energy giving a formation, a bilingual formation, to our students here. They come out of our high school with the choice of going to a university in the language they want. They can function equally well in English or French, and they're readily accepted by all universities in the Maritimes and even in Quebec. So that's a big plus. But we don't get to see them back. We have room for 4 doctors in Shedikan. Right now they're filled. We have room for 2 lawyers, maybe, when they're filled. We have room for some 20 or 25 teachers. They're filled. So until somebody retires or dies, there's no room for any more professionals. So the people that tend to stay are people that earn their living off the sea, either fishing or processing the fish, and the few people that work at the park, and a few in the reception of tourists. But that's not enough to keep our youth. So they're going to move away, and that's a big challenge. We have probably more people, I think I'll forget the probably, we have definitely more people from Shedikan and Saint-Jean-de-Maine origin living in Halifax now than we do in Shedikan. And, you know, and the same is true for Cape Breton as a whole. All the small communities in Shedikan, in Cape Breton, I think, are losing their young people. What can we do to reverse that? I don't know. It's a big challenge for sure.
As Senator Dan Christmas pointed out, contrary to the trend of decline in the community at large, the Mi'kmaq population is growing. That doesn't mean, however, that even the Mi'kmaq are immune to decline.
Well, the biggest challenge is the growing young population. Unlike the rest of Nova Scotia or even the rest of Cape Breton, the Mi'kmaq community is very young. So, for instance, in Eskazoni, they say they have a population around 4,000. They say 50% of that is under 20. So you have a growing, booming population. It's as if today that the Mi'kmaq are going through their boom, right? So what do you do with all those people? Not only in terms of jobs, not only in terms of creating an economy, but also basic issues like housing and education and health. How do you keep up with that? So just a couple of weeks ago, Eskazoni announced that they built a new health center. I mean, they're trying to keep up with the population that's booming in their community. So that's the biggest issue, I would say. It can be a positive or it can be a negative. The negative, of course, is if there's no opportunities for those young people here in Cape Breton, they'll go down the road like everybody else. And Mi'kmaq have a much closer connection to their land and their waters and their peoples and their communities. So for them to go down the road, that's pretty well the last resort. The positive, of course, is that Cape Breton's population is slowly bleeding to death. From 1991 to 2016, Cape Breton lost 30,000 people. That's according to the census. That's the equivalent of the city of Sydney disappearing over 25 years. We're losing Cape Bretoners at a rate of roughly 1,100 people a year. It's almost 100 people a month, right? But on the other side of the coin, you have Mi'kmaq people who are growing at a very fast rate. So the opportunity, I would say, on the positive side, is that if our 5 Mi'kmaq communities in this island begin to continue, like Membertou, to reestablish themselves in the economy, and I would say not only Membertou, I can see now Wekogomog near Waikagma is also now reestablishing itself in the economy. If the 5 Mi'kmaq communities in this island begin to grow this economy, then not only will it benefit our own young communities, but I would say like Membertou, it'll rebuild the surrounding communities. And there's legal issues happening as well. So one big issue, for instance, is the whole Crown duty to consult, meaning that if there's any impact or any projects or any businesses that affect the lands and the resources and the waters of Mi'kmaq traditional territory, in our case, it's Unimwagi, then it needs, the Crown needs to consult both federal or provincial with Mi'kmaq. And the Mi'kmaq then have a huge say on what happens in Cape Breton. So I would say that going into the future, we're going to have to change how Mi'kmaq are involved in the governance of this island. Right now, the Mi'kmaq people do not have any Mi'kmaq MPs, no Mi'kmaq MLAs. Of all the town councils or the municipal councils here in Cape Breton, there's only one council member on the CBRM. No, Mi'kmaq have to have a say on this island, not only in terms of its lands and resources, but I would say also in its governance. And I think that's going to be the challenge for the future, is how do we then reestablish a new governance system on this island that has a voice and a huge say for the Mi'kmaq.
Dr. Arsalan Raza pointed to the dearth of opportunities as a cause of the decline.
The challenges are the same for both Muslims and non-Muslims in Cape Breton. If we can make the economy of the Cape Breton stronger and have opportunities for people to work here, people will work, come and live here. You know, there would be a subset of people who would like to be close to the big cities, that you can't stop that, and there will always be. But you will always find people who want, you know, jobs and work. And if they can find that, then that's, I think, the only missing link in the, you know, whole scenery of Cape Breton. Cape Breton has a, you know, amazing people. They have a, you know, good lifestyle. It's not a huge city. You know, things are accessible. A person who is not fan of big cities and who is happy with the life of a smaller city, but can get the job he wants, the desired, you know, and then I would think that people will come. The hindrance is if someone want to make it home, and if they can't find a job which can sustain him, then it would be hard to imagine that person to just come for the love of Cape Breton. If we can provide that missing by, you know, and solution would be to make the economy of Cape Breton stronger, maybe, you know, introduce some more industries there, you know, rather than just a hospital and some other places employing most of the people, some other, you know, avenues of people, you know, job creation would be, you know, something would help to increase them.
And Ken Donovan explained to me that there's also the problem of transitioning to a new type of economy, a problem which is particularly acute in Cape Breton.
Well, I heard Malcolm Gillis talking about, he's a planner for CBRM, and I think he's going to be retiring this in 2019. And he said, you know, he's been working for 40 years. He said, I didn't realize when I started my career, I'd basically be managing decline. And Cape Breton, for the most part, has declined over the last 40 years. And, you know, we saw it. Steel plant closed in roughly 2000, 20 years ago, but the plant had been in troubles before that, you know, because steel wasn't being made in the West anymore. But we're part of the post-industrial economy now. You know, where in Canada do they actually make things anymore? Not too much. And, you know, we saw where the Oshawa car plant closed, but guess what? They're not going to need people to make cars very shortly. They're going to be made by robots. They don't need union breaks. They don't need coffee breaks. They don't need workers' rights. They just keep turning work product out. And this is the future that faces all of us, because there's talk now of a low unemployment rate in Canada and the United States. Well, Gwen Dyer was down not too long ago, and he said, well, the real unemployment rate is more like 17 to 20%. And we have to start thinking in terms of guaranteed annual income, because there just isn't going to be enough work for people, because machines are going to take it over. And like you think of all the repair business for automobiles, when the electric cars come, You got a little electric motor over in the corner with hardly any moving parts. You're not going to need mechanics. You're not going to need drivers. Thousands of jobs going to disappear. Okay? So there's going to be, and there is, a lot more leisure time. So this winter we live in Engadish. First time I've lived in Engadish during the winter in 1966. But it's not like when I grew up. Everybody has four-wheel drives and big four-wheel drives. And they have tractors and plows. And so, yeah, you get a storm, but bingo. You know, as soon as the wind, as soon as the snow stops, it's cleaned out. So it's quite a difference in lifestyle and advancement just through mechanized machinery. And I guess the money's and availability to afford it. Do you know what I mean? So it gives you an example of, my wife said when the storm came, they'd be lined up about 6.5 going out the driveway, shoveling it. Do you know what I mean? And quite a difference, huh? And so when I say about the future of Cape Breton, we are in the post-industrial economy. So we're able to sit at our desk and do things. So when I go to Mexico, I'm able to organize the Old Sydney Society meetings in Mexico. I've got everything lined up, but I can do everything, and I've done it from there. I do publishing all the time, and I do everything from there. So it's amazing how our economies are changing and have changed and will change. So we have to adjust to less employment, and there's a way to do that. More, well, education, I would say, and getting people into things that where they know how to occupy their leisure time. And we're seeing it in Cape Breton now, active transportation. You know, you're going to soon have a road from Sydney to Glace Bay, totally, where you can walk right along there. It's at the university and beyond now. Not a highway, but pedestrians, which is really something. It's a totally different way of thinking, right? So yeah, we're changing and we're evolving, and we don't have as much pollution. We're very much into tourism now, but we are into the post-industrial economy. So that's the stark and the measure that I would use. So we fit into a wider world. Yes, we are an island, and we are people, and we guard our and protect our culture, and we have a vibrant culture, and we need more employment. And you can see what's happened in Cape Breton just in the last 2 years with the East Indian students coming, right? A lot of vibrancy in Cape Breton as a result of that. And that's what we need, more incentives for immigrants to stay once they come. And the Nova Scotia government and the feds are, they have active programs along these lines, you know, to make it work. Because Cape Breton is an incredible place to raise a family. It really is, and I can say that from experience. Because I was fortunate enough to have a job and be educated and work here. But there's room for everybody.
Gabriel LeBlanc also told me that there's a lack of real opportunities for our young people.
Well, number one is one of economy. I would like to believe that in time, that given the fact that locally here, that it is the Acadians that are the economic motors of the community, that they would expand and provide meaningful work, you know, not fish plant work, but work that would give you, you know, a decent salary that you can be able to build your own house and you can, you know, have decent living. That is not taking 3 or 4 working at the plant to survive. That is my wish. And in every part of Cape Breton as well, because that's really what's happening in Cape Breton, is that we're educating our kids for somebody else. And it's sad. But given that the primary resources are no longer here, we have to go, you know, and diversify. And hopefully we will get people that will do exactly that and bring in work, much needed work, and build a community that, you know, a community with harmony, with strong moral standards, and where we could live in harmony and not riot would mean helping one another. And that's important to me, because I don't think that capitalism is the answer or consumerism. know, of course, maybe it's a reflection of my age, but where you get a certain age, you want to declutter and downsize. Well, that's where I'm at now. And to me, it's important. I'd like to see more young people, young families, coming in and be an integral part of the community rather than lose them elsewhere. And I think Sydney has the same aspirations for any community on the island.
On the Isle of Cape Breton, my father did stay. And his father's father before, fishing the banks and digging for coal. But the mines just can't give any more, so I'm going down the road, boys, seeking what I'm owed. And I know it must get better if far enough I remember the fisherman returning so gay, the nets with the silver cod blast, they couldn't compete with the company fleet. Now it's welfare checks and friends going west, so I'm going down the road, boys, seeking what I own. And I know it must get better if far enough I go. Oh, I'm going down the road, boys, seeking what I owe. And I know it must get better if far enough.
So what are the solutions? Luckily for us, our diverse culture here on Cape Breton Island is a source of strength, as Dr. Tom Urbaniak explains.
But the challenges can't be minimized. But the solution lies in what Moses Cody called being masters of our own destiny. We have to establish what I've referred to in articles as affirmative self-government. So that means some formal authority, more formal authority devolved to this region so that we can make our own decisions and gather up our own resources. But it also means sort of informal methods of self-government. So some of the efforts we see in some of the communities, like Bay It Forward or Northside Rising, or the amazing work that's being done in Gabarus, where my students have been very privileged to be a part, those are examples of informal self-government where people adopt and also use the Polish expression, the solidarity strategy. It's like we're taking matters into our own hands and we're organizing our own communities and we're going to try to act as if some of those barriers don't exist. Not that we're naive or that we're promoting some sort of false consciousness, but that we believe we have the wisdom and the capacity and limited resources, yes, but pool, those resources have power. So affirmative self-government is, I think, part of the recipe for the future prosperity of Cape Breton. The continuation of the multicultural reality, that is critical. That is, I think, one of our greatest assets. And that's where you find examples of affirmative self-government. So what we've been discussing in the context of the Polish community, but not just the Polish community, where organizations are formed, events are organized. This stuff is driving the local economy, where visitors are welcomed from outside, where we use our cultural assets to actually build international ties. So we've recently had the incredible experience of working with the Cape Breton Regional Municipality and other partners to set up the sister city relationship between Cape Breton Regional Municipality and Wałbrzych in Poland. So Wałbrzych is a city of 115,000, similar population size, formerly based on coal mining. It's a post-industrial city that has done some very creative work on revitalization. What an incredible partner. And we've involved students on both sides. So you may recall at the signing ceremony on January the 11th, which was done virtually by video conference, we had students on both sides taking a lead. And so students have continued to communicate with each other, looking at, for example, joint park projects, like designing parks that reflect each other's communities. At CBU, we now have a memorandum of understanding with our counterpart university in Wałbrzych. So that's a commitment to work together, and one stage of that will be student exchanges, starting on a small scale, but then hopefully evolving over the years. So that wouldn't have been possible if we hadn't had the cultural asset, a vibrant cultural community, after all these generations still functioning.
Marty Chernin, ever the business-minded fellow, sees the solution in getting people to invest in Cape Breton business.
We need the people that are here now, the younger people, especially people that are in their 50s or whatever, or 40s, they have to reinvest in the community, not just their own business. One thing we did, myself and Tweedy and our partners, we reinvested in Sydney, and we just kept building. And we took lots of gambles. Not all our deals were good. Lots of deals went sideways, but luckily more were positive than went sideways. You know, we tried different things. We had Joe's, for example, Joe's Warehouse and Smooth Herman's, then we bought Daniel's. Then we had that little place, Peaches, that was a dessert place on Charlotte Street. Then we opened O'Toole's here in 500 George Place. Didn't work. That was a franchise. We lost lots of money there and closed that up. And So the younger people have to reinvest in the community and help other businesses and other entrepreneurs that are getting started, because we, like I say, we invested not only in our own stuff, but in all kinds of other businesses. And for example, TechLink. We had a lot of money in TechLink, and we took a bath there, you know. And but meanwhile, that because government stuff, whatever. But meanwhile, when TechLink was in full operation, they had employed 60, 70 people for 10 years and a good-sized payroll, too. So that's what I mean by outside investments. We invested in the Mount Cameron Minerals, which was supposed to be a graphite mine up in Cox's Hills. And graphite, as you know, is needed now, especially with electric cars coming in every, because you need graphite for batteries. Anyway, that didn't work so well. It's still in existence, bought by another company. Maybe it'll happen. But the big thing for Sydney, I think, is that if we're fortunate enough to get that container board, that'll make a big damn difference here. Huge. And I'm still hoping that may happen. And, you know, we've got the potential in tourism, but tourism right now is mainly summer when we generate all the money. But although these young entrepreneurs that are going to take over the Lakes Golf Course and bought the Birches Inn, they're expanding there, and these young guys like Rodney Colburn, Mike Kenny, Troy Wilson, you know, they've opened Montana's, Eastside Mario's. So they're creating business activity, big investment at the lake. They're well under construction at the Birches. I think they're adding 24 rooms, expanded the dining room and everything else to service the golf and the ski hill. And the other big thing that could help downtown business here is they moved that community college downtown, bring 1,500 students and, 200 professors to the core. These empty buildings, the downtown core will get revitalized. So that could be a real big boom to the area. And but I mean, people, they got to realize that they have to work. And if you want to make things happen and keep the quality of life up here, you know, you have to invest. And the old saying, if you don't speculate, you won't accumulate. But the more things that happen, create more jobs. And the spin-offs go on and on and on. But what I'd like to see is what these young guys are doing now, reinvesting in other things in the community besides their main business. You know, like I said, with the golf course, the lakes, the Birches, all that. Because all those people have their other businesses besides that. So, but I still think that Cape Breton's got a future, and that we just gotta keep slugging along, you know.
AJ Balyan has a simple answer. We need jobs.
In future, the main challenge here, the jobs, the main jobs. If, like, as students, like 1,200 more students coming next month, just from India, not from the international students, just from India and the other countries as well. So without job, it's so hard to, it will gonna be like so hard here to live. So they're gonna move out. And the Cape Breton will be like, it used to be less populated. There will be no youngsters, teenagers here to work. Everyone going to move out. And the only solution for that is if, like, the government, Nova Scotia government, open some warehouses, some factory, or something like that, so that they can at least give jobs to, like, 200 to 300 students. So if they get job, they're going to work here. They're going to stay here. Like as me, I got the work. I'm staying here. My friends, they got the work. They're staying here. Like my brother, he just got his permanent residency of Canada. He's staying here as well. Because he's a manager in McDonald's. Because if you have survival in Sydney, in Cape Breton, you're going to stay here. We're going to love here. And it's good for the community as well. Like basically, a student at least spends at least $600 a month for itself, for its eating, for its living, $600 a month. So just multiply that into 3,000. How much a student is spending a month? Just see. How much they are spending in a month without the job? If they have the job, they're going to spend $1,000 a month a student. It's good for the community. It's good for the people here. It's good for us to stay here. It's a small town. Like in the future, what I'm seeing here now, after 2 to 3 years, students stop coming here. They'll not come here. And they'll move to Toronto, Ontario, Alberta, something like that. And then again, the financial crisis will come for the Capitan again. Like as it was before 2014 and 13. Yeah. And the only solution for it is to create the jobs, that's it. If they have the at least like 20 hours a week job, they're going to stay here for sure. It's really good place to live. It's peaceful. It's nice. The people here are so nice. Those are the main things that a student really want to be here. Not only the student, the immigrants. Like, see, my uncle, he's trying to immigrate here. He's trying to create jobs here. He's trying to come here with his family. So if government supports them, it will be good. If not, they can only work for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and then they have to leave. It's not good for the community. I don't want them to leave, because now I like the Capitan most from out of the other provinces.
Jaime Batiste sees a great deal of potential on our island and says if we can work together, the sky's the limit.
You know, one of the things that Engage Nova Scotia did is a provincial body I sit on, and they rated happiness. And, you know, most people rate, when they look at where you're from, you know, everything is about GDP or economy and things like that. But one of the things that they're more looking at is this quality of life survey and saying, you know, what is it that you enjoy? And when they did this quality of life survey nationally about what people enjoy, I think that there were three from Nova Scotia in the top, you know, 20. And Inverness County was in the top three. And so the thing with Cape Breton is that we have an abundance of beauty. We have a beautiful place. We live in a beautiful place, beautiful environment. You know, I really think that, you know, the Mi'kmaq, if the Mi'kmaq worked together with our local leadership, that we could bring so much to Cape Breton. But I feel like there's always that fear of, oh, well, the Mi'kmaq are getting this, or it's member two's getting this. But what people don't understand is when the Mi'kmaq are successful, just like member two, Sydney's successful. And when you have growth in a Mi'kmaq community, a lot of the times they're not just employing their community members, they're employing community members from everywhere. And so I think that the moment that, you know, our leadership of the five Mi'kmaq bands, as well as the leadership in our municipalities and MLAs, get together and start realizing that the more that we build together, the better off we're going to be. And we see that in member two with all of the things that are going now. You know, they brought back bowling to Sydney. And it's, as I understand, it's an amazing place. And, you know, you have the member two trade and convention center. But all of our communities have that potential. You know, whether it be Eskasoni, you know, we have, or Budladek, or, you know, all of our communities have potential. And I think that if we continue to do the things that respecting the environment, ensuring that, you know, the next seven generations have that environment, have the beauty of Cape Breton, and that, you know, we keep making this place a beautiful place to live and a beautiful place to grow up with, you know, the water, the lakes, the golf that we have. I mean, Cape Breton is becoming an attractive place to visit and to come and to live. And we're showing that, you know, the future of that, I feel, is reconciliation. We have to figure out at some point. They're currently negotiating all of the rights that you know, land rights and resource rights. And I think that when the quicker we get to a partnership between the Mi'kmaq and the provincial and federal leaders in this area, the more we can bring, and the more Cape Breton will grow. And I believe that, you know, Senator Danny Christmas is a beautiful example of that, is that we have a Mi'kmaq senator now, but he's done so because they were able to grow member two from something that was in debt and show that now that it can be successful. And I think that where the success is the implementation of the treaties that we have, and the reconciliation will lead to growth for this area.
For Victor Tomacek, the solution lies in retaining the students who've come here to study.
Well, I feel our challenges aren't entirely new. Like, our generation and
my parents' generation, I've all been kind of challenged with how do you transition well out of a post-industrial reality. Having our new partnership, sister city, Wapchow in Poland, and we recently just facilitated a student exchange agreement with the university there as well, and seeing how they transitioned from their industrial economy. It's great to have those kind of partnerships. I think the challenge and the solution could very much be tied to the university. The MBA in Community Economic Development, I think, is well suited for progress in Cape Breton. We don't need giant industry to come and rescue us. We need to be able to build our economy ourselves, for ourselves, within a somewhat of a closed system of product generation and consumption. And having 5,400 students learning at, I believe, a world-class institution, if we can build the infrastructure to keep these students on the island, this is a major part of the solution for Cape Breton, I think, as well. It's all about having the infrastructure to keep people here and facilitate their idea generation and turn that into reality. And that would be a good step towards a healthy island again.
We called home. We built our dreams from nothing, it seems, working dimes to the bone.
Thank you.
For me personally, I see tremendous potential here. I, myself, am a recent arrival to Cape Breton. Although my family's roots lay in Whitney Pier, my parents moved away in their youth as my father pursued his career in the Royal Canadian Air Force. I, myself, was born in Red Deer, Alberta. I grew up in communities across Canada and even spent some time living in Germany as a child. I didn't move to Sydney until 2014, as I entered my 40s. I am what would be known as a come-from-away, but I've never felt like an outsider here. I've spent most of my summers here as a youth, and so this island has always felt like home to me. But still, a question nagged at me. Am I, in fact, a Cape Bretoner? What is the price of admission to the Club of Capers? It was the Cape Breton Island Center for Immigration at New Dawn's manager, Sohaila Abdo, that gave me the answer. The most succinct explanation of what makes a real Cape Bretoner that I've ever heard.
I think there is a bright future ahead of Cape Breton if we keep doing what we're doing and we keep being nice and kind to each other and we keep accepting the different and welcoming the different and not being afraid of the different. I think we're going to grow, and I think more people are going to come, and more people are going to want to come here. I think the main problem that we might face is not retaining these people, or this bright future not staying bright for so long. And there is something that I believe in, is that if you are willing to be part of the future of Cape Breton, then you are already a Cape Bretoner. So that makes me a Cape Bretoner, and that makes the new student who just came here, who loved the place and wants to stay and wants to build a family here, that makes them, they're Cape Bretoners already, because they want to be part of tomorrow. So our work here is to try and avoid out-migration, whether for the local or the refugee or the newcomer. Try and support each other and welcome each other and build this place together, because we're all Cape Bretoners. If we want to stay here, if we see tomorrow here, then we're all Cape Bretoners. So out-migration would be a problem, but it is really not a problem. I think it's a threat, and as long as we're aware of how to not make that happen, it's gonna be okay.
Well, I guess the old town's changed since the day I left home. City is home to me for now, but it's not where I belong. Sometimes this place seems like a prison, waiting for the day I'll be free. And all the things you take for granted are things that I never see. So give me my home on the island, give me my home by the sea, where the water's so blue and the meadow so green. Cape Breton, you belong. My home by the sea. for my time to come. Oh, when I return to those Cape Breton shores, a place that I'll always love. So give me my home on the island. Give me my
And so we conclude our series. My special thanks to each and every person I had the privilege of meeting through this project. I am honored to have experienced so many facets of Cape Breton and met a great many generous, outstanding people. A final thought. Even though this series may have reached a conclusion, the story continues. Every day, a new chapter is added to the story of home. I'm Donnie Antle. Thanks for listening.
Curating Cape Breton's Multicultural Mosaic, a dedication to diversity past and present, is a Coast 89.7 original production. We would like to thank the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Radio Meters program for its financial support of this series.